Where do you look for a cold-blooded killer? The MPs guarding the Salah ad-Din found theirs in a cargo hold, inventorying food supplies. We huddled together in a small room a few doors from the cargo hold, watching him on a security screen. The man looked like a general issue clone, just another enlisted sailor counting crates on an inventory tablet.
He's been in the exact same spot for 16 hours now, ever since you left for Gobi.
Have you sent anyone in after him?
No, sir.
Do you know if he's armed?
We can't be sure, sir. Not without sending a team in to apprehend him.
But you haven't seen anything?
No, sir.
The clone on the screen did not look dangerous. He looked neurotic. He had that tablet, but he wasn't writing anything. He kept yelling something, maybe even screaming like a man out of control. Every so often he stopped talking and smacked himself on the head with the tablet. Is there any way to pick up what he's saying?
No. The camera does not have audio. It's for checking inventory.
Too bad.
He's been doing that the entire time.
Doing what?
Beating himself up. Watch his lips. When you see him pucker and grimace like that, he's saying the word spec. He says spec just about every other word.
As Villanueva said this, the man wrapped himself across his forehead with his tablet 3 times in rapid succession. He puckered, then grimaced, puckered, then grimaced, puckered, then grimaced. Watching his lips move, I imagined him shouting the word.
Dangerous or not, he sure as hell is crazy.
Huh. He's both. I'm going in after him.
You don't need to go in there yourself. I have plenty of men.
Alone.
Sir.
I have a better shot at nabbing this guy without your boys getting in my way. This is almost sure to come to a fight. Don't come running at the first sign of trouble.
And at what point should I send in help?
Good question. If I give the distress signal, come in running.
What's the signal?
If you see me flat on my ass and begging for mercy, come in after me.
Begging your pardon, sir, but I hope that's not the same signal you used last time.
I've got the situation under control, Captain, and you have your orders. Give me 5 minutes, then send your men after me.
You do know this is crazy, right?
I know. Don't sweat it. Just get my safety net ready. I seriously doubt he will kill me in the time it takes your MPs to break things up. The cargo hold had 12-foot ceilings lined with bright lights. It was a maze with crates and shelves instead of walls.
Stupid! You are so specking stupid! And now you're stuck here! And what, you think he's ever specking coming back? Speck!
I followed the voice. When I turned around a corner, the clone, the sailor, the infiltrator, heard my footsteps and turned. There was nothing spectacular about him. Just a standard issue clone, standing 5'10", with brown hair cut to regulation length and wearing a sailor's uniform. His brown eyes fell on me, and I saw recognition. He went silent, dropped the hand with the tablet to his side, and saluted. I returned the salute.
Who are you speaking to, sailor?
I was talking to myself, sir. It's an old habit.
You might want to work on that. People won't understand. They might think you are dangerous.
Dangerous, sir?
Oh, I don't think you're dangerous. I don't think you're dangerous at all.
No, sir?
No, not in the slightest. You couldn't even finish me off when you had a gun, and now you're not even armed.
Maybe you got lucky.
Maybe I did. On the other hand, maybe you got lucky too.
Maybe. You know who I am, and you still came. Doesn't that seem a little foolish?
I know what I'm doing.
How do you know I'm not armed?
Because my MPs have been watching you for hours. If you had a gun, you would have shot yourself instead of trying to beat your head in with an inventory tablet.
You were watching me on an inventory drone.
You were entertaining.
Are they still watching us?
Sure. But I can signal them to look away if you think you want another shot at me.
Are you going to arrest me, sir?
Unless you give me a reason to have you shot.
No, sir. I won't do that.
The clone made no move as I signaled Villanueva to send in his MPs. He stood at dazed attention as a pair of MPs entered the cargo hold and put him in cuffs. I watched the scene with bemusement, my combat reflex fading into a pleasant memory.
I heard you brought in a live one.
I spoke with Sam, the apprentice coroner.
More or less.
Seaman First Class Philip Sua was bound, drugged, dressed in a straitjacket, and placed in an incapacitation cage.
I don't get it. The first clone is beaten until his insides turn to pudding, but he keeps fighting. The second clone surrenders without a fight. A coward and a maniac cut from the same DNA? That doesn't add up. Maybe something went wrong with their neural programming. It was now 0300, Gobi time, and the station was silent, except for the swarms of guards patrolling the corridors. Down in the subterranean levels, the halls remained bright as ever.
The first one must have known he was going to die. You know, maybe he knew he was as good as dead, so he kept fighting as one last act of defiance.
Okay, that explains why the first one fought to the death. But why did the second one give up so easily?
Was he bleeding?
No.
Injured in any way?
No.
Maybe he didn't feel like committing suicide.
We were alone in the morgue. Well, mostly alone. Sergeant Kit Lewis was in the room. He was all over the room. His mostly skinned carcass lay on a table. What was left of his face, now rolled inside out and pulled below his chin, hung like the collar of a turtleneck sweater.
Who do you have examining the live one?
They're flying some kind of crime shrink in from Morrowtown.
Dr. Moorman?
You know him?
I've worked with Moorman before.
Have you found out anything more about Lewis?
Good timing. If you'd asked that question an hour ago, I wouldn't have had anything to show you. Then I had another look at the DNA. How much do you know about DNA?
I thought DNA was a dead end.
It is, and it isn't. The DNA itself isn't much help.
I don't follow.
There's gene expression and gene regulation. With gene expression, you can create two radically different creatures using identical strands of DNA. You said this man was unusually strong. It's basic epigenetics. Same DNA, different cell divisions.
And in English?
Instead of looking at his DNA, I had a look at his chromosomes.
Chromosomes? The stuff that makes you a boy or a girl?
I take it biology is not your strong suit.
Sam pointed to a slide on the wall.
Lewis here has the exact same DNA as any other military clone. It's just arranged differently.
If Lewis had the same DNA as every other clone, why isn't he like them? Same DNA, same everything, right?
That's what I'm trying to explain. DNA is the basic building block. Genes are made of DNA, but you can change genes by changing the layout of the DNA.
Seeing I was still confused, he picked up a syringe and a glass dish.
What do these have in common?
They're lab equipment.
They're made of glass. Glass is made of sand. If I have molten glass, I can make a bowl or a syringe, right? Once I melt the sand, I can use the glass to make a bowl or a syringe.
Okay, I get that.
It's not like bowls are made from bowl sand and syringes are made from syringe sand. Glass fruit sand doesn't come from glass fruit deserts. It's all the same sand from the same desert.
Yeah, okay. One desert, one kind of sand.
Okay, so they don't make bowls out of bowl sand and syringes out of syringe sand. It's just sand. What you do with the sand once you melt it is up to you.
But it's not the same with DNA. They selected the specific genes when they made us.
You said this clone was created as a spy. They designed him to break into your forts, right? Can you think of better camouflage than making him out of your DNA? Do you know what chromosomes are made of? You pair a strand of DNA with a protein. Do your security post-test for chromosomes?
I don't know.
His DNA is identical to any other clone's, but his chromosomes are different. Once I started with his chromosomes, the difference became obvious.
Chromosomes? I can see how you might make different chromosomes, but what does that get you? That's the stuff that determines your sex, right? Women have two X chromosomes, and men have an X and a Y.
Women have two X's. Most men have an X and a Y. But Lewis had an X and two Y's. He has the same DNA, but a different set of chromosomes.
Two Y chromosomes? And the Y is what separates men from women. Does that make him more... Would that make him more strong?
It could make him much stronger than other clones. The potential exists. Lewis was like any other clone on the surface, but his muscles could have been stronger. His heart was stronger.
What about his brain? What would that do to his brain?
Oh, yes, his brain. You know, the autopsy would have been a lot more productive if you hadn't shot the subject in the head.
I didn't shoot him.
Okay, well, whoever shot him really specked up the works. The bullet blew more than half of his brain out of his skull, and the part that was left was in bad shape.
He walked over to Lewis and placed his fingers around the bone and muscle remains of his chin.
It wasn't a complete washout.
He turned the head so the empty brain cavity faced toward me.
It's not conclusive, but considering the amount of trauma done to this man, we're lucky we found anything.
Found what?
I took a tissue scraping from the area just inside here.
The kid stuck his hand into the gaping brain pan and pointed to the part of the forehead that had not been destroyed by the bullet.
We got this from his brain.
Using tweezers, Sam held up a gauze-thin strip of meat.
Its NAAs are so low, they're almost not there.
What is NAA?
N-acetylaspartic acid.
That doesn't tell me anything.
It's a compound you find in a normally functioning brain. Things go wrong when it's not there. The lower the NAA level, the bigger the problems, and this guy's levels were really low.
Is there any way we can configure our security equipment to track this?
General, I checked your chromosomes when you came through the door. A coroner can't be too careful.
Before leaving the morgue, I asked the kid to write up his findings and send them to station security, along with recommendations about how the post could be upgraded to scan chromosomes instead of DNA. I returned to my quarters to lay down. As I slid onto my rack, I thought about bowls and syringes and manufactured chromosomes. Sleep did not come so easily that night because along with the bowl and the syringe came images of the cadaver. I'd seen worse. I'd seen rotted, maggot-infested bodies of men. I once stepped on the body of a man killed by noxium gas. My boot crushed through his chest. It was like stepping on overripe fruit. It wasn't the cadaver that bothered me. It was the casual way the damn apprentice coroner handled it that got under my skin. Lewis was a maniac and assassin, but he was still as human as me. As I played the scene over in my mind, thoughts gave way to fitful sleep.
What?
General Harris, this is Jennifer Mormon.
Mormon?
I'm the forensic psychologist you brought in from Morrowtown.
Right. Have you had a look at the clone I brought in?
I've never seen anything quite like him.
Have you made any progress?
Oh, I've made progress, all right. I've made a lot of progress.
I'll be right there.
She heard the door open, turned to say hello, and froze. A strange smile formed across her lips.
Oh, my lord. You're a liberator.
Dr. Mormon, I'm General Harris.
You are a liberator, aren't you?
Yes, I am a liberator clone. Is that going to be a problem?
God, no. It's exciting to meet you. I thought the liberators were extinct.
As far as I know, I'm the last.
General, for a forensic psychologist like me, you are a gold mine. I'd love to sit down with you and maybe pick your brain.
We'll see.
Maybe we should stick to Sua.
What can you tell me about him?
Oh, well, he's an interesting study. I don't believe his name is Sua.
It's not. We found the real Philip Sua shortly after we arrested this man. Your patient had stuffed him into a meat locker.
Was he all right?
I pulled a Freeman and answered the question by ignoring it.
Have you looked at Myron's report?
Maybe I was still tired. It took me a moment to figure out that Myron must have been the older coroner. Myron and Sam.
I've spoken with his assistant.
Okay, well, did he tell you about the low brain activity? I would have come to the same conclusion without Myron's help. I mean, you don't need to spend more than a minute with Sua to see what's wrong with him. But the autopsy confirmed my findings. Philip Sua's problems wouldn't be any more obvious if he had three heads.
And what exactly is his problem?
What are his problems? Sua's problems are legion, General. This man has more devils in him than anyone could ever hope to exercise.
I don't understand. Are you saying he's insane? Is he psychotic?
Psychotic.
Mormon was an older woman, maybe in her 40s, the first traces of gray showing in her hair. She wore glasses. She was trim and energetic, and she approached her work with this queer enthusiasm. I might have described her as a playful authority.
Clinically speaking, he's not psychotic. He hasn't lost contact with reality. Sua's problems are more along the lines of neurosis than psychosis. I mean, he does have an induced physical condition, but his behavior is clearly neurotic.
What do you mean by neurotic?
Let's go have a word with Mr. Sua, shall we?
She led me through the door at the back of the office into the area that had become her makeshift lab. The only furniture in her lab was a desk, a few stools, and three long-necked floor lamps bunched close together like a trio of storks. In the center of the room, Philip Sua lay on the contraption that law enforcement professionals referred to as an incapacitation cage. The cage did not rely on anything as primitive as bars or straps or clamps. If Sua managed to sit up, he could have walked right out of the laboratory. The problem was, his muscles weren't listening to his brain. He lay on a table with two diodes a pin's breadth away from the nape of his neck. Metal filaments inserted into the base of his skull channeled the steady stream of electricity running between those diodes through his spine, rendering his body helpless from the neck down.
Can he speak?
Oh, yes. See, hear, speak, everything but move. He's been very cooperative.
Hello, Sua.
Philip, this is General Harris.
We've met.
Doctor, I've run into two of these clones so far. There's the tissue donor down at the morgue. Then there was Sua. The one in the morgue wouldn't give up. He was coughing up blood, and we still had to shoot him. Then there's Sua. He gave up without a fight.
Mormon had her answer ready.
They built his brain with a slight abnormality. You said that Myron and Sam told you about the slowed activity level in the dead clone's frontal lobe?
That's right.
It's a symptom of BPD, borderline personality disorder. It's not uncommon, well, not among clones, it's not. Mr. Sua is something of an extreme case.
I don't understand. What is borderline personality?
Borderline personality disorder. It's a neurophysiological condition that interferes with the patient's ability to regulate emotion. It affects the way they interpret social questions. If someone told you or me that we had lint on our clothing or a smudge on our face, we'd go clean up and not give it a second thought. It's a normal interaction, something you fix and forget. Someone like Mr. Sua would take it as a personal affront.
So he's crazy?
Not crazy.
And you think the Unified Authority purposely made him this way?
The tissue from the clone in the morgue suggests he had the same disorder. Judging by the NAA samples, he was an extreme case as well.
Why in the world would the Unified Authority want an army of pathologically insecure clones?
People with BPD have a nearly debilitating fear of abandonment. If his superiors threatened him, maybe told him to kill you, or they would give him a dishonorable discharge, Sua would see you as the cause of all his fears. He'd rather die than have his superiors abandon him.
Okay. That explains Lewis's behavior.
Dr. Mormon gave me a funny look.
The one in the morgue. But Sua didn't put up a fight at all. I came unarmed, and he surrendered.
I asked him about that. He said you caught him off guard when you came in unarmed and alone. BPD creates a fascinating dichotomy. Patients have a false sense of confidence. In extreme cases, like Sua's, the patient thinks of himself as undefeatable. He had unreasonable overconfidence. But once you challenged that confidence, he was crushed. He said you disarmed him the first time he attacked you.
The only time he attacked me.
Right. The second time you found him, you came in alone and unarmed, and that made him believe that you had no fear of him. When you treated him like a helpless child, he decided he didn't stand a chance against you and gave up.
So he's useless.
So he's dangerous. This man hates you. He's personalized his fight with you. If he were to get free, he would dedicate his life to destroying you, and he would find a way to do it. And something else. He feels that way about the entire enlisted man's empire. He believes you and the other clones left him behind on Earth to die.
That's ridiculous.
General, it's not ridiculous to him. That's how he interprets information. He's not just an enemy soldier, not just some kind of spy. Because of his built-in insecurities, this man takes every offense as if it were personal. He is strong, he is intelligent, and he's willing to dedicate his life to your destruction. If you're not worried by an enemy like that, you are a liberator. Everyone knows what you're capable of doing. But I would hate to have someone like him hunting me, General Harris.
During breakfast, I gave Admiral Cabot an assignment. We sat alone at a small table in a corner of the mess.
I need you to do something. I need you to get me some information about cruisers.
What are you looking for?
I need to know about landing bays on cruisers.
Okay, what about the landing bay?
The measurements. I need to know the number of bays and the square footage.
One bay. It holds four transports. I'd put it at 3,000 square feet, not including the tunnel. I spent 3 years on a cruiser.
Not our cruisers. Theirs. I need to know about the new ones. The cruisers the Unifieds have been using to spy on us.
Oh.
You can start by going to Navy Intel. You might get lucky.
What if they don't have the information?
Then fly out to the Adin and have Villanueva take you to Terrano. There's all kinds of wreckage floating around out there. You're bound to find a cruiser.
You want me to measure a wreck? How am I supposed to do that?
I don't care if you use your dick. Just get me the specking dimensions. You got that?
It was crude talk, but I needed to get through to him. As we spoke, Cabot sat there watching other admirals enter the briefing room. I could read his thoughts. He wanted to pawn his assignment off on an underling. He wanted to be in the summit, rubbing shoulders with the two stars.
By the way, don't use your dick. You're going to need something longer, and something that doesn't change size every time a superior officer walks past.
Aye, aye, sir.
You better get going, Admiral. I'm presenting this afternoon. I need that information before I start my presentation.
Yes, sir.
The morning's meetings went quickly. We discussed fleet readiness. Warshaw had run a series of drills to test how quickly he could shift forces to meet an invasion. The results were generally positive. I was next on the agenda, right after lunch. With a sinking feeling, I searched the dining hall for Cabot. He was nowhere to be seen. I returned to the summit slightly before 1300 hours, just in time for the meeting to begin. Warshaw came up to me.
I didn't see you at lunch. I hope you don't get all weird when you make presentations.
Just nailing down a few loose ends.
So you ready to present?
I nodded, headed to the lectern, and began with a bombshell.
The Unified Authority is tracking our movements.
I turned to Warshaw.
When you ran that last ERP, you revealed your fleet movements, emergency protocols, and readiness to the Pentagon. The Unified Authority has set up spy satellites to monitor our broadcast activity. Every time our ships broadcast in or out of an area, those satellites read the anomaly.
Why haven't we spotted any of their satellites?
Have you looked for satellites? We're talking satellites the size of golf balls floating in millions of miles of open space. What are the odds of finding them?
Is that what the cruisers are doing? Dropping spy satellites?
If we chart the cruisers' courses, maybe we can find their satellites.
The idea had not occurred to me. It touched off a discussion. As the admirals discussed ways to search for satellites, the door opened and in walked Admiral Cabot. He stared at me, waited until we had eye contact, gave me a nod, then went to the table where I'd been seated.
If they really have those satellites, then they've analyzed our emergency response protocol.
We need to destroy the satellites!
Don't be in too big a hurry to destroy them. It's always a good idea to give your enemies a little misinformation before killing their spies.
A general hush fell over the room as the admirals considered this.
Misdirection, I like it. Norma ships are responding to Orion. Perseus ships covering Sagittarius. Do it right and we could really spec with their intel.
With the meeting dissolving into many conversations, I used the time to catch up with Cabot.
We had to go all the way to Terramel.
What'd you find?
Their cruisers are built for spying, not combat. They have cloaking equipment, and they're fast. They have a top speed of 38 million miles per hour.
So you found one at Terrano?
Three of them. I boarded one myself. It had three landing bays, all kinds of spy gear, and no weapons. Just bays and bunks. And the landing bays were big, almost 10,000 square feet of parking space.
10,000 feet per bay?
That's right.
Oh, shit.
I jump-started the meeting with another explosion.
I caught the assassin who killed Admiral Franks.
I waited for the admirals to respond. But no one spoke. No one challenged me.
The Unified Authority breached our security by creating a strain of clones based on the same DNA as our clones. That made their clones impossible to detect. Over the last few days, we have managed to isolate two of their clones. We arrested one and killed the other.
I spent the next 5 minutes talking about Sergeant Kit Lewis, feeling every man's eyes on the bruises that still covered my face. I told them how I had, for all intents and purposes, beaten Lewis to death, and how he nearly killed me in return. Then I told them about Seaman First Class Philip Sua, who allowed MPs to arrest him without a fight.
These new clones have the same DNA as General Issue clones, but they don't have the same chromosomes. I've issued orders for Gobi Security to update its security posts. If any of the new clones have infiltrated Gobi Station, we should have them shortly. Any questions?
Admiral Swift raised a hand.
How can you have the same DNA but different chromosomes?
I pretended to mull over my answer. Then I stole a bit about glass and sand and bowls and syringes. Trying to come across like a man in the know, I damn near quoted Sam the Coroner verbatim.
I'm impressed. I never realized you knew so much about science.
Feeling more confident, now that I had spoken with Cabot, I continued on to the topic I had meant to discuss before the break.
Those cruisers you've been spotting, they've been carrying more than satellites. They have been ferrying infiltrator clones into our space. The infiltrators are flying into our territory on cruisers, then penetrating our blockades in planes with stealth shields. While we've been looking for battleships or cargo carriers, they've been using private planes.
They're flying Piper Bandits.
Bandits? You mean little two-man jobs? That thing's got a range of, what, 100,000 or 200,000 miles?
Not if they are outfitted with broadcast engines.
That's out of the question. There's no way anyone is going to wedge a broadcast engine into a little two-seater.
I've seen a modified Bandit. The broadcast engine is not much bigger than a shoebox. Instead of a broadcast generator, it has a single-use battery. You use it once, then you have to recharge it.
That's it. That's your big theory of how they're getting here? You think they're flying them in on cruisers? How many Bandits do you think they can fit on a cruiser, Harris? I started out on a cruiser. You'd be lucky to fit 5 planes on one.
Admiral Cabot, tell us what you were doing this morning and what you found.
I took the Salah Adin to Scutum Crux base looking for a UA cruiser.
Did you have any luck?
We found several in the wreckage around Terranel. Per your orders, sir, I boarded one and measured her landing bays.
What did you find?
The new Unified Authority cruisers have 3 landing bays. Each landing bay has 10,000 square feet of floor space, sir. If you packed them carefully, you could fit 18 Piper Bandits in each bay. That means they can transport and launch 54 Bandits per ship, per mission.
Stunned silence. Your fleets have spotted cruisers near every planet in the Empire, is that correct? The cruisers have been particularly active around St. Augustine, is that correct? And then I told them about the massacre on St. Augustine. I had hoped to finish my presentation by having Jen Mormon report her findings, but she never appeared. I rounded up a squad of MPs and rode the elevator down to the basement. We reached the bottom floor of the station. The doors slid apart, and the light from the elevator formed a stripe across the leg of the dead guard lying on the hallway floor. I saw the body and hit the emergency button, causing the elevator doors to close. The 2 men beside me had seen the body as well.
Why did you close the door?
We're sitting ducks. It's dark out there and bright in here.
I thought I saw a dead man.
I wonder if there is any connection between this and that plane we saw in the desert.
What plane?
We found a plane in the desert, sir. We found it while we were patrolling for bandits.
Which explained why they had not notified me. The silly pricks saw the word bandit in their orders and thought I meant robbers. When was that?
Last night, sir.
You. I pointed at the MP with an earpiece in his ear. You just became my radio man. Contact station security. Tell them to place the entire station on emergency lockdown. I want the exit sealed, the elevators stopped, and the emergency stairwells closed off while they run a floor-by-floor search of the entire facility.
What about the landing bays?
That goes double for the landing bays.
Yes, sir.
The MP turned and whispered into the microphone. The panel beside the emergency cutoff held a flashlight, an oxygen mask, and a fire extinguisher. I took the flashlight. Who wants to hold this? You'll be a target. Those bastards out there are going to aim at the light. One of the men lowered his hand. I handed the flashlight to the other. We were trapped in a cramped elevator. 7 men pressed together like fish in a barrel. There are enemy assassins out there. I'm guessing that there are 2 of them. They'll look like general issue clones. At least one of them might be dressed like an MP. One of them will have just come off a cage, and the sides of his head will be shaved. If you see him, shoot him and keep shooting him until you are sure he is dead. If he's got a friend with him, shoot them both. That was all the advice I had to give them. It wasn't much. We pulled our guns. I used my first bullet, shooting out the light in the elevator. I found the button that opened the door and pressed it. The flashlight holder went down. I leaped from the elevator. The other MPs clambered off the elevator. I returned fire, aiming at the flares of the muzzle. The man panicked. He ran past a communications panel, and I saw his silhouette against the lights on that panel. The 3 remaining MPs and I slithered toward the spot where I had hit the infiltrator, feeling our way through the darkness. 2 remaining MPs. I grabbed the infiltrator's ankle with 1 hand and fired 2 shots along his leg. I worked my way along the body and found the dead man's head. I wasn't checking to make sure of my kill. I wanted his goggles. Warm liquid smeared along my forehead as I pulled the goggles over my eyes. Now wearing night vision goggles, I could see in the dark. I glanced at the body beside me and knew that it was Sua, the sides of his head shaved clean. Keeping my gun out and ready, I grabbed my last MPs by their shoulders and stood them up. As they fell in behind me, the infiltrator peered out from behind a corner and I caught a glimpse of him. He wore Marine combat armor. He answered my shot with a grenade.
Shit!
I turned and shoved my men around a corner. I pushed one of my MPs into the elevator, then forced the second one down to the floor. He must have felt the blood and known what I was doing, because he smeared the gore on his chest and face. I left him there, lying still as a corpse with his gun hidden under his ass. Marine combat armor had many uses, but it was not designed for stealth. Me? I was dressed in a Charlie service uniform. My shoes had hard soles, but they weren't extruded from a compound of plastic and steel. I reached a corner, knelt low to the floor, flashed around the wall for a fleeting look. The two men guarding the psychology lab lay dead on the floor. One was inside the open entrance to the lab. The door slid partway closed, struck his body, then slid back into its recess. I moved toward that door slowly, my gun ready, my eyes searching for the slightest hint of motion. Staying low and searching the hall around me, I darted into the lab and kicked the dead guard out to the corridor. Not waiting for the shooting to stop, I hurried back to the elevator. When I reached the elevator, I saw my MPs sitting on the floor. One held a gun in his hand, the other held the flashlight. They heard me coming, spotted me with their light, then shined it on the heap of combat armor lying dead on the floor. I went to the dead clone and kicked him hard enough to send his helmet spinning across the floor. He was dead. The cavalry finally arrived, and only 10 minutes too late. At least they figured out how to restore the lights. With the lights in the hall shining brightly above me, I returned to the psychology lab. Two MPs lay dead in the anterior office, their guns lying lame beside them. They tried to cover the door, but they were blind in the dark. At least they'd stayed at their post to the end. I hesitated a moment and entered the lab. There was the cage, now little more than an empty table. Beside it, toppled to the floor, was the stool Dr. Mormon had used as she interviewed her captive patient. She wasn't by the stool. Her body lay in a blood-stained heap in a corner of the lab. Sua, it must have been Sua, had beaten her to death. Uncontrolled outrage had been built into his psyche. From the angle of her neck and the twists in her body, I got the feeling that simply killing Jennifer Mormon had not been enough to quench Sua's fury. The dynamics of the summit changed on the final day. Gobi Station security sent gunships on hourly sweeps of the desert. When they found 15 Piper bandits hidden in caves and under tarps, they issued an order to fire on any unidentified vehicles or people seen within a 10-mile radius of the base. The first speaker of the day was Lieutenant Pierce, the naval engineer who modified Gobi Station security posts so that they would read chromosomes instead of DNA.
It was easy. We've had no problems reconfiguring the posts to catch double wise.
Warshaw put up a hand.
What is a double wise?
Double wise. You know, clones with two Y chromosomes. The infiltrators. Now that we know what they are, the guys down in security call them double wise. Fixing the posts to read chromosomes instead of DNA was a snap.
So the posts can detect them?
Yes, sir. No problem. We had some up and running yesterday. We would have caught the one who killed that woman, except he was wearing armor. Not much we can do about that.
I understand that. I want to know how quickly you can convert the entire fleet over. What equipment do you need to send out so you can fix the posts on our ships?
They won't need new equipment, Admiral. They've got everything they need built right in.
Pierce was a clone, of course, and a man in his 20s. He fit the exact demographic for which we would soon be screening.
Turns out you can use the posts for MRIs as well.
You can fix meals with them?
That's MREs, asshole.
What is an MRI?
Lieutenant Pierce used more tech speak than he should have for communicating with admirals. They pretended to listen, but now that they knew the problem could be solved, they didn't really care about the details.
Magnetic imaging? A resonance scan. The clones you're looking for, their brains are slightly deformed. It was in the lab report. There's a side benefit to running MRIs. We'll be able to spot brain tumors as well. We really will spot tumors.
Oh, if you can configure the post to cut hair, maybe we can use them for barber duty.
After Pierce finished his presentation, Warshaw went to the lectern.
You did good work, Harris. You did good.
We still have a problem.
What's that?
Combat armor. It's like Pierce says. The clone we caught in the psychology lab got around the post by wearing combat armor.
Do you think he knew you were reconfiguring the posts?
He might have. There's a chance we got him before he reported anything. We should have picked up the signal if he transmitted from here.
So it is your opinion, Harris, that the other infiltrator clones do not know that we can modify our security posts?
No.
Okay. Then we're still in business. Order your Marines to turn in their armor.
Won't that tip our hand if we issue a fleet-wide order recalling all combat armor?
Now what if we said we were going to update their armor with shield? We could say we know how the Unifieds added shielding to their armor.
No one would believe it.
We could say we were going to update our interlink hardware so the Unifieds can't pick up our signals.
I like it. Tell them that the latest intel shows that the Unifieds have been listening in on us. We'll say that we have a new circuit that will keep the Unifieds out.
We're going to have to root the infiltrators out like weeds. I told them about Philip Sua and how he hid in a cargo hold pretending to take inventory for 16 hours.
One quick cut. We do it all at once. One swipe all the way across the Empire. We send out teams to update the posts on every ship and base, then we scan everyone all at the same time. That way they can't warn their friends.
What about the planets? What about the men on leave?
Maybe we won't get them all, but we'll get most of them, and the residuals will run for cover. They'll know we're onto them, and they will run. All that leaves are their planes. You see someone flying a Piper Bandit, don't even ask them for identification. Just blow them out of the sky.
The last time I saw him, Ray Freeman was flying one of those planes. Earth date, November 11, AD, 2517. Location, St. Augustine. Galactic position, Orion Arm. We searched the airports, the fields, even the open deserts, and we came up with 6,323 bandits on St. Augustine. A few of the planes belonged to legitimate civilian pilots, but most were UA-modified with a tiny broadcast engine, a single-use broadcast battery, and an energy-efficient stealth shield. Considering the odd places in which we located a few of these planes, I suspected we had not yet found all of them. One bandit turned up in the parking garage of an abandoned sewage treatment plant. Another was hidden in a cave filled with bats, its wings and windshield buried in guano. The most creative hiding place was a pawn shop for high-ticket items. The local police located that particular plane during an investigation. The man who ran the shop had been murdered. Some of the planes had been on the planet for weeks. There was no telling what had become of the clones who had piloted them or how much damage they had done. By the time I arrived on St. Augustine, the Easter egg hunt had ended. I hadn't come looking for planes. I went to Scrubs, the restaurant where I had spotted an infiltrator clone my first night on St. Augustine. I spotted Freeman the moment I entered. He sat at a two-man table, looking as out of place as an adult at a child's tea party. Freeman spotted me, but made no move to invite me over. He sat quietly, pretending to look the other way while watching me in his peripheral vision.
There are a lot of clones in here. Are you sure they're all friendly?
One of them wasn't.
Where'd you leave the corpse?
In a bin out back.
Was he much of a problem?
No, not much of a problem. They're going to invade Olympus Kree.
You're behind on the news. They're already on the planet. We found a couple of hundred bandits hidden—
I'm not talking about clones.
When?
5 days.
Are you sure about that?
They want the Orion Arm back. Now, sooner or later, they'll come here, too.
That doesn't sound like Brocious. We have more ships, more men, and more resources. That puts the odds in our favor. And he never moves unless he has the upper hand.
Brocious is out. Brocious, Newcastle, Smith are all gone. The Linear Committee cleaned house 2 months ago.
Have I met any of the new brass?
Well, Hill is still around. He replaced General Smith at the top.
Nickel Hill? General George Nicholas Hill had run the Air Force effort on New Copenhagen during the alien attack. Not the bravest officer in the military, but a bright guy and a man who spoke his mind. He always struck me as fair.
All the new leaders served in New Copenhagen. That's the new litmus test. Officers who duck New Copenhagen get field assignments.
Hill isn't stupid. He's got to know we have 10 times more ships than he does. Even if he takes Olympus Kree, we'll just take it right back again.
You have 100 times more ships. Their self-broadcasting fleet took a real hit on Terrano.
I knew they lost ships.
A lot of ships. They had to decommission half the ships that returned home.
Well, if that's true, it only makes an attack on Olympus Kree more ridiculous. That doesn't sound like Hill. What aren't you telling me? There is something you aren't telling me. He shook his head. Why should I trust you? He didn't answer. Instead, he changed the subject.
Have you figured out why the Pentagon sent out those clones?
The double Ys?
Is that what you call them?
I don't know if you heard about their chromosomes. They have an X and 2 Ys. Apparently, that makes them more dangerous. Sending out saboteurs isn't going to sink our fleet.
You still don't get it. Hill doesn't want to sink your fleet. He wants to take it back whole. Now, you're looking for a war while he's slipping you rat poison. He figures if he kills off enough of your officers, your enlisted clones will just hand the ships over. He doesn't care about clones. It's the ships he's after.
Then he's out of luck. We've pretty much cracked our infestation problems.
They're tracking your movements, too.
Right, the satellites. You were the one who clued us in about them, remember? So if it comes to a fight, are you taking sides?
We're talking.
Are you looking for work? If you have an angle on Olympus Cree, name your price.
I watched him closely. Freeman wasn't in this for the money. He'd made over $1 billion on New Copenhagen.
What are you looking for?
We're all after the same thing.
Yeah? And what's that?
Survival.
I called Warshaw to give him the news.
The Unified Authority is planning to attack Olympus Cree.
Tell me something I don't know. If they ever get around to picking a fight, that's where they're gonna start it. Everyone knows that.
In 5 days.
5 days?
The attack is coming in 5 days.
No shit. Who's your source?
Ray Freeman. The same guy who warned us about the satellites.
Wasn't he the bastard who shot you on Terrano?
And told us the UA was about to attack.
But he was working for them. He was delivering a message for Admiral Brocious. What if he's still working for them?
He says he isn't.
You believe him?
I don't know.
He sounds like a real saint, Harris.
He was right about the satellites.
Maybe he was right. We still haven't found one. It makes sense that they're spying on us, but that doesn't make it true.
UA spy satellites and God. You can't prove either exists, but your questions are answered the moment you accept they're out there.
I've never met this friend of yours. You think he knows what he's talking about?
He always knows what he's talking about. That's not the problem. It's not a question of confidence, it's a question of trust. Freeman's out for himself. Even when he picks a side, he's still out for himself. He keeps his cards hidden and plays his angles tight. So far, he hasn't even told me why he's helping us.
So why trust him?
History. Until now, he and I always ended up on the same side. He makes a damn good ally.
Harris, that doesn't even sound like you. You're a brute. You're a Speckin' Liberator clone. If he's not telling you what you want, catch the bastard and beat it out of him.
Beat information out of Ray Freeman?
If you think he's a spy.
Not a spy.
Sounds like a trap.
Maybe. But we'd still better get more ships out there. I don't see that we have any other choice.
What about the double Ys?
We'll take care of them first. We can close that chapter today if we need to. All the pieces are in place.
Yeah, Hollingsworth says everything is ready. All he has to do is pull the trigger.
Then pull the trigger. The sooner we close that door, the better.
That still leaves Olympus Cree. I'm not sending any more ships.
What if the Unifieds have figured out a way to knock out our broadcast stations?
Not very likely.
Probably not. I'm just thinking out loud.
I could send a few more ships, just in case.
I'm going to take the Ardeen out there. I want to get as many Marines on the ground there as possible.
We were coming down to zero hour for the infiltrators. Hollingsworth began the day by sending out a fleet-wide order recalling all combat armor. Until we sent out new orders, any man caught in armor would be detained, questioned, and ultimately have his chromosomes scanned. With the cogs quickly falling in place, Freeman and I met at Fort Greely, the local Marine base, for breakfast.
How did you get to St. Augustine?
I flew here.
Another one-way ticket?
I caught a ride in your broadcast network.
How is the weather in Odessa?
Odessa was the capital city of Olympus Cree.
It depends on how you feel about rain.
Beats the hell out of living in a desert.
Does Olympus Cree have the same seasons as Earth?
More or less. It rains hard in Odessa during the winter.
I'm not sure I can get any more ships to Olympus Cree. Warshaw wants proof.
Tell him to get used to having 22 planets in his empire.
We have a fleet circling the planet. We'll outnumber them. Even if they send everything they have, we'll still outnumber them.
You have 68 ships in the area.
You know the size of our fleet?
Freeman said nothing.
And you do not think that's enough to protect the planet?
Freeman did not speculate. When he knew the answers, he gave them. But he was not one for guessing.
Have they figured out a way to attack our broadcast stations?
I haven't heard anything either way.
Well, once the attack begins, we can call in 1,000 ships if we need them.
Freeman said nothing. I wondered what card he was hiding.
I'm taking the Ardeen to Olympus Cree. If you want to ride back, I can take you.
I have a ship.
What are you hiding, Ray?
He did not answer. At 1100 hours STC, space travel clock, Captain Villanueva held a ship-wide briefing. Attendance was mandatory. I watched the scene outside the third deck auditorium from an overlook as men lined up in crooked queues and waited to file through the doors. The MPs stood out with their helmets, armbands, and batons. We had recalibrated posts on the inside of the auditorium doors. Pre-screened MPs manned the computers. An army of MPs monitored the lines. If anyone tried to slip away, he was escorted back to his place. Immediately below me, a sailor broke ranks and four MPs descended upon him. They formed a circle, blocking his way. I tried to listen to what was said, but could not hear a word of it. Looking almost straight down on the scene, I could not see faces or expressions. When the sailor did not turn back, one of the MPs reached out and grabbed his shoulder. The man jerked free, then turned and returned to his place in line, unescorted. As the sailor approached the door to the auditorium, he made a few furtive glances over his shoulder, but the MPs were right behind him. A fight broke out in another line. A man grabbed the sailor in front of him and threw him to the floor. Three MPs ran to break up the fight. The sailor who had started the fight took a menacing step toward one of my MPs as he arrived on the scene. The MP drew his baton, but that seemed to mean nothing. The sailor took another step. When one MP tried to club him, the man caught his wrist and stopped the blow. The other two MPs stepped in to help. One of them hit the man in the ribs. Watching the drama closely, I almost missed the man at the end of the hall as he stole into the shadows with the grace of a phantom.
Somebody stop him!
No one could hear me over the din. I used the security link built into my collar.
I need backup, now!
I charged after our rabbit. I dashed along the corridor, running in the same direction as the phantom, but one floor up. I could not see him. If he turned right or left, I would not know, and I would lose him. Sprinting, swinging wide around a corner, I dashed down a set of steps.
Where are you?
They're on their way. These halls are packed.
Get them here quickly!
I was at a T-junction. The corridors were empty to the right and to the left. I turned right, then changed my mind and sprinted left. The halls of the Ad-Din were a labyrinth, with offshoots and avenues and hatches. Without seeing which way my rabbit had run, I had no prayer of finding him. I ran back in the direction from which I had just come and spotted the blood on the wall and two dead Marines. So much for my backup. I was only a few seconds behind the clone. Now in full pursuit, I ran around a corner, spotted the gun, and stepped back behind the wall in time to make him miss. I knew I could catch him. I sprinted down one hall, took a right turn, and spotted him. He took a right turn into a long, narrow passage, where he didn't dare turn to shoot because there was nowhere to duck for cover. He was 40 feet ahead of me, and I was gaining on him. Then his steps slowed, his stride shortened, and he glided, then coasted, then stopped. He held his hands in the air, the muzzle of his pistol pointing to the ceiling, and he slowly turned to face me.
Drop it.
Without my giving the order, he slid his gun toward me. Two MPs came dashing around the corner about 100 feet ahead of us, their pistols drawn.
Are you going to shoot me?
No. You're missing a mandatory briefing. We're going to escort you back to the auditorium.
I didn't even cuff the bastard. Of course, I hoped he would run or put up a fight. He didn't. And when he passed through the posts and the computer identified him as a double Y, we cuffed him. He lowered his head and said nothing as we led him to the brig. We captured 7 infiltrator clones on the Ad-Din. We caught 17,000 double Y clones in our net as we swept every ship and base. Next, we had to decide what to do with them. Warshaw held an emergency convocation on the Kamehameha to discuss plans for disposing of the double Y clones.
From what I hear, we have 17,000 prisoners of war. How the spec did the Unified Authority manufacture 17,000 new clones in under a year? I thought the Mogats destroyed all the old orphanages.
I had an idea of where they might have come from. Toward the end of the Mogat War, an enterprising admiral created his own private clone farm for making seals. It was secret and small, which was why the Mogats missed it. Small as it was, that clone factory might have been able to mass-produce 17,000 clones in a few short months if its assembly line was on overdrive.
Ah, well. At least we tagged them and bagged them. So what do we do with our prisoners? They're too dangerous to keep in prison.
Everyone nodded in agreement.
So what do we do with them? Kill them?
We wouldn't be killing them. We'd be executing them. They're spies. They were caught wearing our uniforms.
Admiral Adrian Tunney, commander of the Orion Central Fleet, spoke out.
Well, Spec, why are we even having this discussion? Those bastards aren't human. They're deformed clones. They're synthetics gone wrong.
Deformed clones? Why don't we eliminate all the synthetics? That way I won't have to hear so many stupid comments during my staff meetings. Harris, you helped us catch them. What do you think the Unified Authority hoped to accomplish with those clones?
I have no idea.
You have no idea? That's it? Not even a theory?
You want a theory? Here's a theory. Maybe the Unified Authority wants its ships back.
And they don't have the brass to come after us in a fight.
Huh.
So they kill off the officers, and anyone left is so scared they just hand over command of our ships? Is that what you're saying?
Something like that. It's just a possibility.
We had found a solution to the double Y problem before we fully understood its significance. Interrogating the double Ys didn't help. The pathetic bastards did not even know as much as we did.
What are we going to do about Olympus Kree?
Warshaw must not have told the other admirals about Freeman's warning.
Harris believes the Unifieds are going to attack Olympus Kree.
Well, that's a pretty safe bet.
He says they're going to attack early next week.
How solid is your information?
Pretty solid.
How many ships do we have patrolling the planet?
68.
How did you know that?
From the same source that told me the Unifieds were on their way.
Maybe your man isn't blowing steam after all. What do you think we should do?
We need to send more ships to the area and land more Marines on the ground.
Philo Hollingsworth met me as I arrived back on the Ad-Din to tell me about his promotion. He waited for me in the landing bay and waylaid me as I came off my transport.
Warshaw gave me a promotion.
You got your star. It's about specking time.
3 stars, sir. He promoted me to Major General.
I had no doubt Warshaw had made that promotion to send me another message, and he'd been none too subtle. The promotion put Hollingsworth and me in the same pay grade.
Congratulations. When are you shipping out?
I'm not shipping out. My orders are to remain on the Ad-Din.
The last update I received, we were heading for Olympus Kree. Is that still the case?
Yes, sir. I wanted to speak with you about that.
I nodded and started toward the exit. Hollingsworth fell into step.
Admiral Warshaw says you think the Unifieds are going to attack.
I do.
We have 500,000 troops stationed on Olympus Kree.
I did not know that.
Yes, sir.
That's a lot of men.
I gave them orders to look for sonic cannons, in case the Unifieds attack.
I had to think about that for a moment. Finally, I flashed back to Lieutenant Mars's findings on Terrano.
In case they have shielded armor.
It was your idea.
Yes, and if it doesn't work, we can always try to get them to chase us into an underground garage.
There were always wild cards in battle. If a sniper targeted you from 2 miles away, for instance, you would never know what hit you until God gave you the details. Even factoring landmines, snipers, and atom bombs, I always felt that as a combat marine, I had more control of my fate than sailors had of theirs. I felt helpless riding into a combat zone on the Salah Ad-Din. Olympus Kree was not an especially large planet. With the Salah Ad-Din and 2 more carriers transferring in, the space around it became even tighter. Admiral Nelson had his ships arrayed in perfect order. His 68 ships patrolled well-defined routes. Battleships and carriers patrolled larger zones. Frigates and cruisers stirred in smaller circles. The blockade formed a nearly perfect net. Nelson was that rare officer who comes off cocky, smart, and competent. I did not appreciate the logic of his tactics until Captain Villanueva explained the blockade.
I don't see any holes. How about you?
Here. And this one's probably the biggest.
Villanueva pointed to a spot near the top of the planet, circumscribing the vulnerable area with his finger.
Think you could squeeze a ship through there unnoticed?
Not a big ship. Maybe a frigate? I could slip a whole squadron of Piper Bandits through that hole unnoticed if they were cloaked.
So he did a good job blockading the planet?
Textbook.
If the Unifieds attack, do you think we'll be able to fight them off?
Depends on what they send. How about your Marines? Can you hold out if you need to?
It depends what they send.
The Olympus Kree broadcast station floated 230,000 miles above the planet. We kept the blockade well clear of the station. The last thing we needed was for our patrolling ships to stumble into a broadcast zone and end up in the Cygnus arm.
What if they go after the broadcast station?
He has 2 carriers and 3 battleships watching it.
Is that enough to keep it safe?
He gave me a wicked smile. I interrupted him before he could answer.
I know. It depends on what they...
Ain't that the truth? The way Nelson has his blockade set up, he can shift 15 ships to any spot at any time. It's a thing of beauty. See these ships over here? They can shift over to the broadcast station in under a minute.
He pointed to a battleship, 3 dreadnoughts, and a couple of cruisers.
I never liked Nelson, but the bastard knows his tactics. You look worried.
I am.
The blockade is solid.
Thinking there must be a flaw, I took another look at the plans. I saw nothing. We still had time to make changes. If Freeman had his facts right, the Unifieds would come in another day and a half.